The current interest in the UFO subject is high by any stretch of the imagination since the New York Times story of December 2017. But there have been peaks in the past, public interest very high in the 1950s and in the 60s based on UFO waves that occurred and got covered by the media. And then it sort of the interest wanes at different times. So will that happen this time? My guests, the young guns of ufology, Danny Silva and Joe Merja, are in it for the long haul. We'll be right back with more questions about cases they've covered right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Danny Silva, a hypothetical question. You've got 10 minutes in a room with anybody you want to interview about this topic, and they have to answer your questions. Who's the person going to be?
Wow. I'm not sure there's a lot of talk about some of these generals, that's for sure. There's a couple people and Dr. Diana Pasulka's book I'd like to talk to. I have a theory that the heaviest people that are in this and the people that know the most, we haven't even caught a whiff of who they are. So it would probably be just some hypothetical person that I don't even know the name of that probably knows the most about the subject.
Joe?
The former head of OSSEP. That would be my guy. I would love to talk to him. There are so many questions I have about how this started and how OSSEP started and what information they collected that we may never see the light of day because it's classified. So, I have hopes one day before I die that that stuff will leak out. But yeah, I would love to be in a room with him and talk to him. Or
It
Russ
is
Bigelow would be a great one also. Bigelow
Bigelow.
too, yeah.
Yeah, that would be a good choice. It is amazing how little attention OSSAP has received from other media, but it's hard to get information about it, you know.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to criticize the New York Times because yeah, like you said, a lot of people don't talk about it. Most places do not even mention it. So, maybe that I for a while I thought maybe it's because they're not direct, there are not people they can talk to about it, but Elizondo has spoken about it. He I'm sure if the press media asks him about now that it's public, once it went public, the name it came out, he started talking about it. In the beginning, he wouldn't talk about it. But now he, so I don't know what the reason is. I really don't. I don't know if
So
you have any theories on that.
well, I do, but I'm maybe going to report them myself one of these days. Let's talk about special access programs because that term SAPs has come up in several different contexts in the discussion of UFOs in the last 2 years. Danny, you wrote about Bernie Haich speaking about it, and a couple of other people have addressed it as well. What did you learn? Are there other special access programs dealing with this that we haven't heard about?
Probably there are. A lot of people definitely claim they are. There are. Not everyone agrees, obviously, but most people think that a lot of stuff is hidden in the special access programs in the private or public industries. Not everyone has the same ideas about what they hold, or a lot of people think that they put them over there to get out of government oversight. And a lot of the UFO debris could be there as well as the programs. But I don't understand everything about them, but it's just another congruency. Like you hear all the different groups and all the different people saying that there's crashed craft. Well, now everyone is talking about these special access programs, different UFO people that don't even like each other are all still agree about the special access program. So I'm sure there are programs, UFO programs in regular government and in regular armed forces and things like that. But when everyone keeps talking about these special access programs, it seems like they're just harping on it over and over again, and they want us to know about it. They don't want us to forget about it. So I think it's a big deal. And we've heard people like Eric Davis saying that, some of the special access programs, they may not even know what each other are doing. So they could be doing the same things overlapping. We're spending the money on each of them, and they don't know what the other group next to them is doing. So there seems to be a lot of room for error when it's so secretive like this. And, there's been some of these leaked documents that, admirals, allegedly, I would say, don't even get to know. They're told to kick rocks if they try to find out what's in these programs, and just it doesn't seem like it's the correct way we should be doing things. But regardless, it seems to be one of the biggest stories and biggest leads, other than maybe the meta materials, is this special access program story.
Well, I'd say that the Tic Tac case is maybe among the most important, maybe not necessarily the most spectacular, but the most important in the effects that it's had. I mean, without the Tic Tac case, without Dave Fravor and the other witnesses, without the video, I'm not sure that that story gets told, or at least not in the same way. Joe, you've worked on the Tic Tac case a lot. You've analyzed the video. You know, we've seen so many lame attempts online on various social media to debunk it. It's birds. It's a flare. It's the exhaust of a regular jet. Anything that'll stick gets thrown up against the wall. You would agree, I would think, that the video makes it an important case, and for a variety of reasons, but that the explanations that have been tossed up by debunkers don't stick, right?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and it was a couple of weeks ago, Seth Shostak from SETI was on, and he said, well, David Fravor had an interest in UFOs when he was, you know, before all this. And I'm like, I've never heard that before. But that's irrelevant because David Fravor had three other witnesses with him when he did, you know, when he was within a half a mile of the Tic Tac. He had his backseater with him, and then the other plane was providing high cover. So that's four people who saw there was an object there, and the object did amazing things. We know that for sure. The only thing we don't know is if it's ours or if it's somebody else's, you know. And I don't think it's foreign. I think it's either other anomalous or, you know, our tech. And that's definitely one of the best cases with all the witnesses that have come forward. And there's more witnesses, and hopefully, and I know there are people online, and I've talked to some of the witnesses, and they're like, there are other guys out there that I've spoken with, but they don't want to come forward. They just don't want to deal with this. They don't want the grief. So, you know, that's one thing hopefully if this becomes more accepted and more mainstream, we'll have more witnesses. And hopefully, like with the Gimbel case, supposedly there are 60 individuals, depending on you. I heard anything. Mellon mentioned 100 individuals on the show and unidentified. So imagine how many pilots had experiences if they came out. It was huge seeing two active duty pilots come out on unidentified. If it becomes a dozen or two dozen, I think that's going to push us over the edge. And then if we have open hearings on Congress, which Tom DeLonge thinks maybe 5 to 7 years from now, that's what people need to realize. It's a long haul. It's going to take a while. You know, people just need to have patience. And Luis Elizondo, during his lecture this year in Alabama at the SCU, he said, that's the one thing I tell everybody, you need to be patient. This is a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, that's good advice, and it's true. I mean, it's people have been grappling with this for a long time and haven't figured it out. Lou Elizondo not only advocates patience, but, you know, he's withstood so many attacks on his credibility and character, and it's an odd thing for him. I've got to know him a little bit, as I guess you guys have as well. It's an odd position for him to be in. He spent most of his adult life in some pretty dangerous assignments and situations, putting his life on the line, protecting national security, doing what he thinks is his patriotic duty. And he enters only in the UFO world does he become a bad guy. It's such an odd place for him to be. Would you agree?
We were talking about this earlier where, you know, what does the public think of this? And fortunately, a lot of the big-time criticism, it's only in the UFO community. It's among the subsect of the UFO community. Not even the UFO community at large cares or thinks that Elizondo didn't run the program. It's only a handful of people, and the public isn't even questioning this. Not only that, but, you know, he's proven to different news agencies. He's shown documents to the New York Times. That's what they claim. I've been able to see some documents, and, it proved to me that he was the point man on ATIP. And not all the details, I think, are still known about ATIP, so it makes it muddy. And Lou isn't just coming out every time somebody tweets to counteract their tweet and retort on their tweet. So, you know, he's busy. They're doing things. They're traveling all around the world, and they're trying to make moves. They're talking to politicians. So his number one priority isn't to retort anytime there's a blog written. So I just think we need to be supporting these guys. And if you can still question and you can still debate, and that's fine. But at the end of the day, the public, I think, believes his story, and they should.
I know that both of you have tackled this question about the patents of what seem to be patents for, in essence, a UFO, and then exotic propulsion and energy systems. Joe, first you, and I've seen you on various social media addressing this. What's the significance of these patents that have come out in the last couple of months?
Yeah, the science is beyond me, but the people I talk to don't think, they're surprised that they actually got approved. So it was a negative response, and I trust the people who know the science because it's above my head. And there's other people on Twitter saying, yeah, these patents are, they should have never been approved. So I really can't argue that because I don't really know the science. I don't know if Danny has any take on that.
I have a lot of takes on this. First off, why is it public? Because a lot of these patents can be secretive, from what I understand. So why did they even make it public in the first place? Second, if they're claiming they work and they don't really work, then that's fraud in a way, or it's illegal. I'm really been kicking myself. Actually, a friend of mine, Twitter user Jay, that's his alias, he's broken a lot of stories. Well, he's come up with a lot of stories and tipped me off, and I've been able to break them, including when Lou Elizondo's resignation letter leaked, which was a big deal for us. But he saw a lot of this stuff first, and I didn't write about it. I didn't think it was credible. Meanwhile, there's been this huge media wave about him, so I could have been writing about some of these patents before that, and I've been kicking myself ever since. But there's a lot of stuff kind of simmering under the surface with these patents, and almost everyone doesn't think that we know everything we're supposed to know about them, and there's something off about them. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but plus no one's been able to talk to that guy Pace or however you pronounce his name, but they're just really weird, and on the face of it, maybe they are just viewing the Tic Tac, they're viewing the gimbal, and they're trying to recreate it in the lab somewhere, but probably there's a lot more to it.
I had mentioned at the top of the hour about public interest can wax and wane. It rises, it falls, and it's hard to know if this time it's going to stick around. I got a feeling it's going to, because we've learned so much and so many people are energized about it. But it's, as Joe said in his Uber ride, people said, yeah, I heard about that, and they go back to talking about football or whatever. It's that's the way it's been. There are always more pressing issues in people's lives, their kids, their wife, their spouse, their bills, things of that sort. But there are some existential issues involved with this. We've heard over the years about these incidents at nuclear plants and nuclear bases, both in the U.S. and Russia. And Danny, you wrote about an aspect of this involving India and Pakistan. Can you share that story?
Yeah. There's been a lot of initiatives going on in India. They're talking to the Chief Justice of India out there. They were pretty much unsuccessful with it, but they contacted To The Stars Academy, Luis Elizondo and Hal Puthoff to be exact, and they kind of jumped in and they wrote some letters also to the Chief Justice. Basically, they don't want misidentification of UFOs as military activity, and they don't want a nuclear war started between India and Pakistan, you know, over these UFOs who've been proven over and over again to basically be investigating the nuclear areas or at least doing reconnaissance on them. I was able to release the letters from Luis Elizondo and Hal Puthoff, and that was an exclusive for me, so that was really cool. But it just goes to show that To The Stars is caring about other countries around the world. They are trying to help people. They didn't get anything out of this. In fact, I don't think it was ever going to be made public until it started getting talked about a little bit here and there, and I kind of dug in and was able to release them, but it wasn't something they were doing for publicity or anything like that. It was kind of just because they cared about it. But the nuclear patterns between UFOs consistently over nukes, you've talked about it a lot, George, and that's the main thing that Lou has focused on, other than saying that they're around water. So those two patterns, I think, are something we can't take lightly, and we need to continue to dig into and focus on.
We look at UFO secrecy and we wonder what the motives are behind it. Sometimes the Pentagon has done things in its own self-interest. It's kept secrets because it wanted to hide evidence of skullduggery or something else that the public would explode about. Sometimes they've done it in the interest of national security. I would think, UFOs messing with our nuclear weapons, if they come out and make a big deal out of that, that it might scare the heck out of people, and what there's not much they could do about it. And then there's a third area that I think has some pretty alarming potential, and that is health effects. When people come into proximity of these unknown craft, whatever they are, whoever is flying them, there are some bad effects. And Joe, you've delved into that. Some of the people who are directly interacting with people who've had these effects, what have you learned?
You know, the big question for me is, you know, people supposedly are injured by getting too close to these craft, but the big question is it just, you know, is it on purpose? Are they sending out some sort of energy that's injuring these people, or is it just a matter of just being too close? You know, just not that the occupants are trying to hurt anybody. It's just like, you know, it's whatever radiation or whatever kind of energy is coming from these craft is injuring people. And I know there's been reports. There's not a lot. I have not been able to get a lot of detail because just the information is not out there. Kit Green and Dr. Gary Nolan have done a lot of work with that. They do pro bono work. And that is an article I'm working on. But the angle is slightly different. Kit Green is working. He has worked with intuitives before, and he has one specific intuitive who is supposedly amazing with her medical information, and she gives information about the experiencer and talks about whatever injuries, how they're feeling. And according to Kit Green, for people who don't know, he was in the CIA, and he ran the CIA weird desk, which was like 10% of his work, but he did remote viewing. He focused on UFOs. And this one particular psyche he works with, he told her that her medical information is 95% accurate, which is amazing for a psychic. You don't see that kind of accuracy. That's something I'm working on, hopefully this week, if I hear back from Dr. Green.
Well, yeah, if there is confirmed health effects, negative health effects from being in proximity to these things, that would get the public's attention, I would think.
And Danny, and there's also it looks like there's a positive effect, which Danny had the article on his website about the Caudette Putinen, if I'm saying that right.
Danny, yeah, what's that?
Putainen or something.
Putainen, yeah, that's right.
That was released by my friend, Twitter user Jay, wrote that one, and it was based on Gary Nolan and Kit Green's work, and they're doing really important stuff with that, and now there's universities trying to dig into it also and kind of reproduce some of the things they were working on. One thing that's really odd is that even people that have good experiences with the others or with whatever you want to call them, many times they're injured also. So I find that interesting.
You know, you guys have these sort of flame wars in various social media. There's banter, and then there's outright feuds. And in a larger sense, I think maybe it's pretty good, even though it can get pretty nasty at times. It's generally overall good. It's a good, healthy exchange of ideas. Do you still feel the same way, even though it gets personal at times? Danny, you first, and then Joe.
I try to fall back a little bit on some of that. But, yeah, I mean, people can debate ideas. They can debate opinions, sure. But if facts are wrong and blatant facts, not kind of subjective facts, then you need to step in and correct them. So, and I guess you're right, and it helps us to kind of get to the bottom of things. One thing we got to keep in mind is it's not just in the UFO community. You can go into anywhere online now. It's kind of just the culture of 2019, you know, whether it's sports or whatever, and people are threatening to kill each other on football teams. So it's not just UFOs, but it seems really bad and really toxic with UFOs. But I know a lot of important people also read our debates on there, and they may not be chiming in, but they think they're helpful, and it is just an exchange of information. And you know, if we're not correcting some of these people and stepping in, then no one else is going to. Like you said, Elizondo isn't sticking up for himself on social media. He's only doing sparse interviews here and there. So you know, we're trying to give his point of view from how we understand it, at least.
All right. Danny Silva, Joe Mergia. Joe, I'll get your answer to that on the other side, and then we'll take calls, questions, comments from our audience, talking with the young guns of ufology, talking with Joe Mergia, Danny Silva, about UFO journalism in the age of social media. Very democratic these days. These guys have jumped in with both feet. cover a wide variety of topics related to UFOs and subsequent mysteries, and they're ready to take your questions and calls and comments and discuss a wide variety of these subjects. So let them have it. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. You know, it's well known that people get into the UFO field because they want to really get rich and cash in. And, you know, everyone's gets rich covering this stuff. At least that's what the debunkers and skeptics say. Oh, you're just writing a book or doing this for money. You guys do it because you love it. And I asked about this earlier, and Danny, you made reference to it. With all the time that you devote to this, it can't possibly make sense from a financial standpoint, but is there some way you do make some income from it?
I have a Patreon site, Silver Record on Patreon. It's the amount of money I make off of it is pathetic, I'll be honest with you. But it's mainly for the love. If something more comes of this for me or Joe, I think we would welcome it. Maybe one day we'll be more than citizen journalists. I'm not so sure. But yeah, it's for the love. It's for the answers, I think. We all want answers. And in a lot of ways, we're trying to be activists. We want the public to know what the UFO community believes. And we want to be able to talk to people about it in our everyday lives and not be laughed off. And we want the world to know what we think is going on.
Same question, Joe.
I think I have ads on my site. So my blog's been around for, I'm not even sure when I started. It's been a year or so, and I think I've made $200 on the blog. And my Amazon Associates account I just started, I've made $2 on that, which is $2. And all that's more than I ever thought I would make. I never thought I was going to make money writing about UFOs and the paranormal, so it's, you know, that's not my goal as far as getting into it. Would I like to do it full time? Yes. And I have no problem with people. You know, people are like, oh, that person's writing a book or that person's charging for the information. I have zero problem with that. As long as they're doing it with integrity and honesty, that's really all I care about.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, people make a film or write a book. They put their time and energy into it, and they want to get paid so they can continue to do the work, to make trips and research here and this and that and travel around, investigate things. And that's the way it is. We have a capitalist system. I think everybody gets paid in their day jobs, whether they chase UFOs at night or not. We're going to go to the phones, see what's on people's minds. First-time caller Jerry in Visalia, California. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, how's it going?
All right.
I'm so glad I got through tonight. Jeez, this is a subject dear to my heart. I was a OS, an operations specialist. I worked in CIC on a fast frigate back in the late 80s, 90s. And we actually had a run-in with these things for 3 days.
Where were you? Where was it?
South China Seas. And we were prosecuting a Soviet submarine. Fast frigates, we were mostly doing ASW duty. So we were tracking a Kula class. This is back during the Cold War, by the way. And it was at night, and I just got on watch at midnight, and we thought they were just fishing boats. They're just little white lights in the horizon. They weren't really moving. They were going like 2 to 3 knots. And we're about to go set a new chevron pattern with our last two helicopter. And so we lit off our air search radar, and all of a sudden it seemed like we were almost surrounded. There was like a whole, there was like 8 to 12 contacts popped up. So we got real concerned, and we set our helo out there to VID, visually identify. And these things went from 3 knots, I mean, faster than we could track on our radar, to our helicopter. And we almost went to general quarters, but we didn't. We didn't wake up the captain. He came up. We observed him. And we took black and white photos. And we were really concerned at first. They were like the Soviet spy trawler was out there or something. We had no idea what was going on. And so we messed around with these things for a whole night. Finally, Daybreak was coming up, and we had to land our Hilo, and we started bringing it in, and these things, two of them started coming towards us real fast. So we had locked on them. They were probably only 200 yards away. So I went up to the bridge myself to actually look at these things through our big eyes. And I was watching for probably 20 minutes. And finally, we locked on our fire control radars. And literally, these things discharged like lightning and disappeared.
What?
We put them on our log books, and we called Deseron 21, which was our command. They were on the midway, and they said they'd get back to us. And then the next day, they told us not to put it in the radio traffic. Back then, we'd actually type stuff back then. It was kind of funny, but... go ahead and leave it in our log book, because I don't know if you guys know, but we log everything. I don't know what they do now, but back then we logged everything. Who was on watch, the contacts, of course, the speeds, the IDs, everything. Everything went in there, even our recommendations to the bridge on course and speed corrections. But
wow. Who has the pictures?
We wanted the clarification, so we called them on Navy Red, which is basically a crypto cell phone. We didn't know what it was, really, satellite phone. But they told us it was atmospheric anomalies. And we said, could you clarify? And there was like a real pause for a little while, and they said, ball lightning.
Were you able to see them, that it looked like a tic-tac?
Only when it was moving. Other than that, it was just a ball. But it was definitely affected by our air search radar, which puts out a lot of electromagnetic radiation. And I actually think it was light, because this one just discharged right when I was looking through the big eyes at it. It was probably 5 o'clock, sun was coming up, and we were just between a high and a low. We were about to have a hurricane coming through. So I honestly believe now that what those pilots see, because this was crazy. We were going crazy in our ship when we were on watch that night. I mean, you know, it was pretty tense, because we didn't know if it had something to do with the sub or what. So yeah, it was but once we saw that light, I saw that lightning, it kind of clicked, you know.
Jerry, I'm going to ask you to hang on the phone line and make sure you give your number to Donna, but I wanted to see if my guests Danny or Joe have a question for you before you leave. Danny?
Who has the photos?
Back in those days, there was no digital. We didn't take film. We took black and white photos. RIS, which is intelligence specialist, which was on board, he pretty much did the photographs. That and our AW that was on a helicopter, which, you know, he would operate the sonar buoys and the sonar dipping radar we had on our labs too. But all I know is they went into the IS office, which is kind of like where all the publications are kept. It's like a secret library, top secret library. Other than that, I don't know where they went. But
well,
I looked
at
it.
Thank you for your service.
What's that?
Thank you for your service, for sure. And there's a lot of interesting congruencies with what we've heard in the TikTok incident and other incidents with what you're saying. So I think your story is very important.
Hey, Jer.
I mean, I hate to kind of burst your bubble, because, I mean, if you first time you experience it, because I understand what those pilots probably dealt with, or those CIC officers, or I think it was like a senior chief. I watched that video, and I was like, I know, I've seen those. I know what they are, because it's hard to wrap your head around when you first when you experience something you've never seen before. And It all made sense, though, once they told it was ball lightning, because these things interacting with us. When we would use, like when we sent the helo towards them, they were interacting with the, I think the magnetic field of the helicopter and the magnetic field of the blades. I mean, the whole thing started to kind of click together. It was like, oh, it just boom, you know, in our minds. I mean, it could have been lying to us, but I don't think so. We didn't really do that back then. There was no reason to.
Well, you know, the ball lightning is a quick, it doesn't last very long in general, and it has to be special conditions, but I will accept your word for it. I'd like to explore it further, though, Jerry, so if you wouldn't mind leaving your number with Donna, I'd like to get in touch with you, and I appreciate you calling. Thanks very much. All right, we're going to go west of the Rockies, Terry in Modesto. Hi, Terry.
Thank you for taking my call. I'd also like to thank you, the three of you, for doing on UFOs. I was at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina back in the 50s. And definitely, military, lots of them still do not believe in UFOs. That, I do believe, are people who didn't ever work with it or anything. Because there's some doctors that still don't even know anything about it. But I'd like to ask, have you ever heard of anyone blacking out to where a doctor doesn't know anything is wrong? The first one I had was in the 70s. The last one I had was in the summer of 2015.
And are you saying you had a blackout or a missing time, or what do you mean?
I myself remember leaving my home, going, asking a lady to call a doctor or an ambulance, actually. And I blacked out mentally, but not physically. I went to emergency room. I'm supposed to have seen a doctor, and I've got all the film of what I stated and everything. I had to sign myself in and everything. I truthfully do not remember one bit of it. And nobody, including my whole family, believes it. Have you guys ever heard of anything like this? I know there's other people with this. There's got to be.
Yeah, it rings a bell that other people have missing time and blackouts and not quite sure where they were. Do you have some reason to think that it has something to do with this subject that we're talking about?
Definitely, because I did teletype. This one in the 70s was something military. The one in 2015, I do believe, was something military. Because while I'm out, I can do things that I normally can't do. But being able to talk normal and a doctor not know anything is wrong, to me, that is something very odd. And I know there's other people with it. There's got to be. But doing teletype the way I did and being able to even do typing and all while totally out, yes, it's something with UFOs.
Terry, thank you for the call. I don't know if Danny or Joe have anything to add to that. We appreciate your sharing the story with us, and hope you'll tune in next time. Joe, anything?
I don't have anything.
Okay. Thanks for the call. I'll try to get one more in. East of the Rockies, Mark in Baltimore. Hi, Mark.
Retired Navy, former plane captain, plane sailor. So I can leave you with some positive news. I was in the ready room for an
F-5. Hey, Mark, I can't understand a word you're saying. It's all breaking up. You want to hold? Can you?
I'll try it another time. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. So can you guys share with me where it goes for you from here? I mean, you have hopes that you'd be able to support yourself in doing this work, right, Danny?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's the dream, but if it doesn't happen, I think what we're accomplishing already is amazing. And, one thing I wanted to say is that some of these listeners that may be just tuning in every once in a while or even listening every week, they don't understand all the things that you've done for the subject, George. And I think I can speak for Joe when, you know, thank you for all you've done for the last decades. And we're glad that you have the Mystery Wire website up and running. And we're looking forward to more of your releases in the future.
Oh, yeah. Lots more coming. Why don't you tell the audience where they can find you and what you got, what what might be coming next?
They can find me on all social media, Silver Record, except Instagram is Danny Silver Record. The website is silverrecord.com. I'm not sure what's coming next. I'm always working on things, and sometimes it just falls into my lap, or it's kind of just lucky, basically. But I'm not sure exactly what my next blog will be, but I hope it'll be something great.
Well, thanks. And Joe, where do they find you, and what are you working on?
UFOJoe.net, and my Twitter is UFOJoe11. I believe Instagram is the same. It's Joe Mergia, and you can also find me on Facebook. And I'm working on the Kit Green transcript and hopefully some more information. And I just posted a new blog about what the DIA scientists saw at Skinwalker Ranch that caused them to push for OSAP. And George, one thing, there's one guy that Danny and I get so much information from, Giuliano Marinkovic, and he's just been such a great source of information for us, and I had to get in and get that in there. He's one of the most prolific researchers I know, and we know a lot of the stuff because of him.
Oh my gosh, he's the guy that posts all these articles. He's got this gigantic library of everything that pops up in the media all over the world, right?
Yeah, he has everything. Since the beginning of the New York Times article, he has everything, video and media, and it's just amazing how much you talk about us putting time in. The time he did the work he did on the Wilson Davis document is incredible. He spent so much time on that. So yeah, just a big shout out to him.
So do you know off the top of your head how people find his work? What name they should look for on various media?
If you search Giuliano Marinkovic,
OmniTalk Radio. Also, his page is actually linked on the To the Stars Academy website as well.
Yeah, he does great work. We had him on the program once before. So, anything else to add, Danny, on where things go next, or what interview you want to try to get, or any arguments you're having with people who need to be set straight?
I'm trying to get interviews with anyone that I think is important. There's a few different people I'm trying to talk to. I'd love to talk to your guest in the first 2 hours, Peter Lavenda. That would be huge. But I think everything is pointing towards these metamaterial stories, and it may be slow moving because they want to peer review it with other scientists. But to actually have pieces of UFOs, I think is going to be probably the biggest game changer, other than, you know, maybe more videos are being released or something like that.
All right. Danny Silva, The Silver Record, silverrecord.com. Joe Mergia, ufojoe.net. Thank you guys for being here. I'm so glad you're in the field. It's a UFO, ufology is better for having you guys in it. Thanks very much. And thanks to my early guest, Peter Lavenda. Check out his book, Secret Machines. And to my colleagues there at Coast, Michael Cosio, Donna Walker, our webmaster, Lex Lonehood, Dan Galani, and Chris Boros. I'm George Knapp. Good night, everyone.